This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI Audio's on-air community. And everyone's
in. McLaughlin, and I am standing in for Kelly and Ramya at the moment. You are listening to Kelly and Company on AMI Audio, and we've got a great show today. But before we get to all the wonderful things, I have to tell you about what happened in front of my house at 6 o'clock this morning. I heard a strange noise, a noise that I usually think is made by raccoons, but I was curious, so I went out in front of my house, and it wasn't raccoons. It was two extremely large skunks having a dispute, shall we say. They were going, yelling at each other. I hope I did that just for Kelly. And you know, when skunks get angry, they don't just yell and argue. They also emit a certain fragrance, which takes a while to dissipate. So this was not a lot of fun. I'm not so sure I should have got up that early in the morning. It was enough to make me need two cups of coffee. Anyway, we are going to look at what is coming up on today's show. We have Susan Kearney, who covers garden plants that will help our pollinators. I love talking with Susan. She knows so much about gardens. It's a treat. Then community reporter Annette Dennis highlights summer events at the Covent Garden Market in London, Ontario, including the London Brunch Fest. Sounds delicious. Plus, on our CNIB Smart Life segment, we learn about HumanWare's newest offering in the world of orientation and mobility, the Stellar Trek. So you have all that to look forward to this afternoon. Should be a lot of fun. The Supreme Court of Canada says sex with a condom is a different physical act than sex without one, and that the use of a condom can be a condition of consent under sexual assault law. In a 5-4 decision, the top court says that no, not without a condom, cannot mean yes without a condom under the law. Lise Gotell of the University of Alberta welcomed the news.
Sex with a condom is a specific form of sexual activity, according to the court, and that is going to introduce a lot of clarity in the law that is beneficial for the dignity and equality rights of women.
The court rejected the appeal of a BC man whose sexual assault charge was originally dismissed by a judge, and they ordered a new trial in the case. I've been following this one somewhat closely because it is very interesting to know that when it comes to consent, the consent needs to be quite specific. So you can say yes to a certain act and no to a different act. And if your consent isn't what is actually happening, that's an assault. So we're going to see, following this court decision, what happens in the case now that it has been ordered to a new trial. Very interesting to see what the Supreme Court says about a lot of stuff, but this one is very interesting indeed. For those of you who've been following the various ailments that are out there and in some cases growing, monkeypox and COVID-19 have raised awareness around the world of zoonotic diseases that are passed between animals and human beings. The Associated Press has something to say about it.
According to the Centers for Disease Control, more than half of all human infections, such as malaria, Ebola, and SARS, are zoonotic in origin. Its scientists estimate more than 6 out of every 10 known infectious diseases in people can be spread from animals. Now the Ugandan government has built a lab that tracks zoonotic diseases in national parks, where many communities live close to a wide variety of wildlife. The Uganda Wildlife Authority says the country must address the major challenges faced in wildlife conservation and disease control. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Well, this is interesting. We've discovered that over time, there are quite a few diseases that can be sourced back to animals, not only viruses, but there are bacterial infections, and there are also things like giardiasis, which is basically a parasite, better known as beaver fever. For those of you who have beaver ponds nearby, you might want to remember that that might not be the safest thing for you to be messing around with. We have various information about bird flu, for example, something that has been passed to birds in some fashion, various kinds of birds, has been a problem on chicken farms and then seems to be developing in human beings. We need to pay close attention. It's good to hear that the government in Nigeria is going to be following this closely. We know that the Wuhan virus labs certainly were looking at SARS infections and where they came from. Still a dispute about what's been happening with COVID SARS too. But I think we have quite a lot to think about when it comes to zoonotic diseases. You know, the old adage, after you play with your pet, wash your hands, never goes amiss. You can protect yourself from all sorts of mysterious things by doing that. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Michael Fair. He features The Prophecy, a new summer Audible original podcast produced in partnership with O-Code Media. Looking forward to talking to Michael. Welcome back to Kelly and Company. I'm Danielle McLaughlin, standing in for Kelly and Ramya today. If you miss any of our show, check out one of our repeats. The first repeat is at 5 p.m. Eastern, the next at 12 a.m. Eastern, just after midnight, and the last one at 5 a.m. Eastern time. You can listen to us on many different platforms, but I can promise you, whatever you hear, you're going to like it. Today, we have with us Mike Fair. Let's talk audio entertainment and tech with our friend Michael.
Hi, I'm Mike Fair. iPhones, iPods, and iPads are everywhere, and they're doing great things for the blind. We explore all that, plus audio entertainment, dramas, podcasts, internet radio, and games. We share it all on Kelly and Company.
Michael will tell us about a new summer Audible original podcast. It includes a partnership with O-Code Media to produce The Prophecy. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Very good. Yeah, that's Q-Code Media, actually.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, not a problem. They've partnered with Audible. I wondered how long that would take for that to actually happen. And boy, what an interesting, edgy result it turned out to be.
It sounds fascinating. So what's the basic premise for this show?
So Prophecy is essentially a supernatural thriller. And what is happening is there have been a lifetime's worth of disasters, like massive, weird disasters, rain turning to dust bowl, kind of strange stuff within the space of a month. And it's thrown the world into complete chaos. And the president is, you know, wants answers. An agent and head of this agency responsible for mainly terrorism is suddenly faced with figuring out what is happening with these bizarre occurrences. And this lady comes up to the headquarters of this agency looking for a specific agent, Thomas Scott. And if they don't get to speak to each other, everyone will die. And she feels that she has important information about these disasters and needs to talk to this agent. So that's how it starts. And then other people show up, and it seems like biblical events are kind of happening today.
Goodness, so it sort of sounds like a speed climate change. You know, yes. Everything is happening all at once. Goodness sakes.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. It's really kind of a different take on, like, instead of the Bible being past, what if it was telling us what was going to happen? And then you have a number of the stories just seemingly just start to happen in the present day, basically. And the fallout from that is immense, of course.
Yeah. So is this story basically an interrogation?
Pretty much. It's the agent, of course, is Thomas, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. Very skeptical. And so he is interrogating the lady who claims to be Mary and needs his protection. And so there, and then these two other people show up, Jonah and Daniel, and it keeps getting weirder and weirder. And so he is, of course, really like, what is really going on? Are these people all Looney Tunes or what? Right. And he's trying to figure that out. But we jump from that interrogation into these flashbacks so that you're not trapped in the headquarters all the time. You go back into these people's lives, right? What brought them here? What led them up to now being at this facility, this government agency? And why are they, why have they all been led here? What's going on? And that's kind of the thread that that's pulling everything together.
I guess the Bible's a great source for wonderful characters. I mean, if you're looking, as you write, for good characters to bring into your story, you can't go to a better place than that, I guess. So tell us about Virginia. She's the lead character?
Yes, and she is a well-respected hydrologist, well-established in life, been a professor of hydrology for 2 decades at a university in Ann Arbor, and married to a politician on the way up. You know, he's a very popular governor and hopes to go even higher. And of course, along comes this unexpected pregnancy, and it's completely unexplained. She knows it wasn't her doing anything amiss, and, you know, he is, you know, it doesn't think it's him. It suspects her of having an affair. So, you know, all of a sudden her orderly life is just completely tossed into chaos by this. And she is now faced with, you know, these visions and whispers and things telling her where to go to get protection and to, you know, to save the world potentially. And she has nothing remaining to stop her at this point. So that's kind of, she's now sort of gotten to this agency and is being interrogated, of course, by Thomas, who's trying to figure out what's going on.
And she's not the character who thinks she's Mary. She's a different person.
No, this is the same character, Virginia.
It is the same character. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay.
Thinks she's Mary. Yep.
Okay. And what about Agent Thomas? Who is he?
He heads the agency. He's responsible for this agency. He has to brief the president, who's breathing down his neck, wanting answers, wanting something to take to the world and say, hey, we're on the case, we're on top of this. But Thomas doesn't believe what he's being told. So he's very, you know, doubtful.
He's doubting Thomas, of course.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, these characters are really, unfortunately, you know, it's really hard for Mary and the allies that eventually show up to try and convince him of the reality of these things. So it's an ongoing kind of interrogation and peek into the lives of these people. Daniel and Jonah, of course, both have very interesting and biblically, you know, relevant stories. And which
do any lions come into this story for Daniel?
Yes, he's a veterinarian zookeeper. So he's in charge of the lions at the zoo, right? And he goes into the lion's den to try and take care of this water imbalance in there, and the lions are supposed to be all anesthetized, but of course they aren't, and he gets into some real trouble and should have been killed, basically, but wasn't. And these strange symbols are found in his case, these stars that kind of lead the way to this agency. So it's all very kind of things are biblical stories are kind of being mixed a little bit, like in order, right? They're kind of the Old and New Testament are seeming to happen together, and it's everything at once. It's very kind of well-built.
Cool. So I'm hearing both New and Old Testament happening at the same time. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You get a bit of everything. Now, how well do you find the story to be paced?
They did a pretty good job with that. You're never hung in the interrogation for too long before you're whisked away to another slice of one of their characters' lives. So you never feel bored or like action is necessary. You know, the pace, you know, of course speeds up and slows down, but I think they did a pretty good job. You know, you're not left hanging and not left exhausted by too much action at once. So I think it was quite well balanced in that way.
Oh, that's good to know. Now, is this suitable for younger listeners or is it too scary?
I would say probably not younger listeners. There's adult material. There's some cursing, some violence, things like that. And of course, the biblical story. You have to be okay with the Bible being used in this very unique way of really being played with, essentially, in that way. I mean, the stories happen as they would, except we're in modern times. So now all the boat people, you know, in the original Jonah story, all the people on the boat died. That didn't happen in modern life because technology is thankfully advanced and some of them were able to be saved. So there are changes like that, right? So they're not literally just, you know, taken without any thought for consequence. What would this be like if this happened in the modern day? What might the actual consequences be like? Some license was taken there to make them fit into the modern world, as it were. So you have to sort of be willing to accept that. And for kids you might want to listen to this with, have to be, you know, able to take that.
Yeah. I was wondering, I mean, from the cast of characters, this isn't trying to, you know, make you into a believer or you know, proselytize at all, is it? It's just using the characters.
It's using the characters and making you think about the Bible differently. Like it makes you kind of ask questions, open up your thinking a bit, and that sort of thing. So, and of course, it's very modern, socially conscious in its ambition. So you get some of that as well, modern consequence, modern problems of race and class and everything else come into this. So it's very ambitious. It's about 5 hours, 4.5 hours roughly. And, well put together.
Do you find that you just want to hear, just keep on listening do you need to have a pause for a breather?
We binged it all. We listened to the full 4.5 hours back to back.
Oh,
we
wow.
had to know what happened. So yeah. And that,
oh,
was,
that
was
speaks
quite
well.
Fun. Yeah.
That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. And the
What about the acting? That's just what I wanted to know. How is the acting?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like Q Code Media, what their strength is that they pull in the real star power. So they have Kerry Washington as Virginia, as Mary, and then Lawrence Fishburne as Doubting Thomas. So you have those two leading actors, and all the other actors are great too. The acting is just top notch from top to bottom. Really well cast for this, and it's just a real treat to hear them go through this and really give it life in a lot of ways.
Because the actors just make such a difference, don't they? I mean, sometimes you listen to a book and you know, this is really a good book, but why do these voices make me feel so irritated, right?
I've experienced that. So yeah, you can't do much better than Lawrence Fishburne. I mean, that's just
he's got a wonderful voice too, doesn't he? I mean, you can
you can
listen to him most of the day. Yeah, that's lovely. I'm pleased. Now, what about the rest of the sound and the music that goes with it? I'm assuming it has music that accompanies it.
It's basically like you're hearing a summer blockbuster that's 4.5 hours long. Like it's the sound effects and the music are just that good. Q Code Media is kind of known for really good sound work, and they don't disappoint here. It's a very good job done on this. And I guess Audible provided, I don't think money was a problem for these folks. You know, with Audible and Q Code, they're the top dogs in their field at the moment. And if they're teaming up for things like this, and it's neat because there are no commercials. Normally in a Q Code Media production, you get a lot of commercials, but because this is for Audible members, it's free for members. If you're already paying for Audible, you get this free. And it is, a top notch entry in this catalog. And you can just go listen, grab it, add it to your library, listen to it for free. Wonderful stuff.
That's wonderful. You know what? Who wrote The Prophecy? I remember seeing it, but I can't remember who it is.
Well, it's Randy McKinnon was the name of the writer. And I haven't seen his name come up before for anything. So it's based off of a book series. That is quite possible. But this is certainly, Q Code Media and Audible teaming up to do this. And
do you know if the script was written by the author of the book, or did it go right to Audible? I don't know whether you would know that.
That I'm not sure. I'm not sure who really had the final say in these things. But it came off well. I, if I were an author of something like this, I would not be disappointed in the result of that. I mean, just top-notch quality from stem to stern.
That's really great. You know, I was thinking that something that's based on the Bible, you'd have a hard time deciding what sort of commercials would be appropriate, wouldn't you?
Oh, geez, yeah. That is quite the landmine. I'm kind of glad Q Code chose to partner with Audible and just give up on the commercial take on this, because it really is, really worth the listen. And I think Audible listeners are going to be quite happy with this edition. They've got a couple of really good editions for this summer, and this is definitely one of the top tier ones.
It sounds terrific. Have you listened to some other Q Code productions recently?
They did do one that we heard a while ago, and the name is escaping me. They have about 23 of them now, and they've made quite a name for themselves, just bringing well-known actors into the whole audio podcast realm. And typically, one of the actors is also the producer. And they kind of do that double duty, and then they have their experience in podcasting, and that seems to be what's happening with them. A while ago, they did a really good sea adventure, and they did listening. That was the last one we heard. Listening In was the last one of theirs I covered not too long ago now, and that was about the smart speaker that's kept giving this lady peeks into other people's lives in her building. And the results of that.
So they go in for spooky stuff.
They have quite a range. Yeah, there's spooky, there's funny. They do just straight comedy. They had a kind of a Lethal Weapon type thing where you have a couple of just deadbeats turn into just get into an assassin kind of thing and want to track down one of the world's top assassins for the bounty. And boy, do they get into trouble. That was quite a kick, fun to listen to. So there's an immense range. They've done it really quickly too. Like this is, I can't remember when I first noticed these people, but they have pumped out like continuously over the past few years. A bunch of these, and now, of course, they're getting interest from people like Audible. Things can only get better for them. And Audible Original, it certainly is a good move on their part. They're pulling in more outside help to really boost their game and get access to things like actors who normally they might not be able to quite pull in. And it's an amazing combination.
Well, what a great resource. Thank you so much. I really appreciate learning all about Q Code Media and about this wonderful book. Thank you so much, Michael.
An absolute pleasure.
Take care. That was our friend Michael Fair. You can find The Prophecy as well as many other Audible original shows on Audible. They don't cost any money or credits, provided you are an Audible member. Michael Fair appears each week on Kelly and Company to discuss audio entertainment and accessible technology. Coming up next is Susan Kearney, our favorite gardener, covering plants for our gardens that will help our pollinators. Welcome back to Kelly and Company. I'm Danielle McLaughlin. You can stream AMI audio on several different platforms on your desktop or mobile devices. You can find us on TuneIn Radio using the app on your phone or iTunes, or even on your Victor Reader stream device. Wherever you go, that's where we are. Today, we're going to be speaking with AMI's favorite gardener. Susan Kearney joins us now to talk all things gardening.
Hello, I'm Susan Kearney. Join me on Kelly and Company to learn about the joy of gardening by using touch, taste, scent, and sound.
Hello, Susan. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. I'm good.
And even better, how's your garden?
Well, it's different this year. It is different. I've done a little bit of different things this year, and not done as many things as I have done in other years. But it's all right. It's going all right.
I bet it's still a pleasure. I can imagine how lovely it must be. And I understand that you've been working with pollinators. So let's get to know plants for our gardens that will help our pollinators. What have you got?
Well, some of this is a bit controversial. I will say that, because I've heard a lot of controversy lately about plants that help our pollinators. Not all of them are controversial, but many people have started to put some wildflowers into their gardens, and some wildflowers are not acceptable in some municipalities. It has created some controversy, but some of these plants are very important, because as we move into the pollinators' habitats, then we're taking those habitats up by putting our habitats in where they used to live or where they used to migrate. And so when we take away those wild plants, many of them are wild, wildflowers. We talk about wildflowers, and I'll start naming some. One is clover.
Oh, I love clover.
I do too. And I keep quite a bit in my grass. Yes, it does a wonderful, and it attracts many different types of bees, wasps, and so many pollinators that will go on to pollinate things that we need to eat. So that is the first one. I don't like it when people sort of pull it out or say that it looks awful, or you know, they want a perfect lawn.
Anyway, oh, I don't know why they pull it out. It's so lush and green, and the other thing is that when you do cut the grass, it smells delicious. It does. Smell of clover.
Yes, and it doesn't hurt other animals. It doesn't hurt other pets. It's not something that's toxic to other pets.
Right.
So or other animals. So it can stay there. My next one is dandelions, and I do know that this is controversial, but I always have them in my garden. I love them when they come up in the spring, and they are very important for some of our first pollinators, and that's why they shouldn't be sprayed or whatever people like to do with them. They should be left, and I know that I think people are starting to garden that way a little more, and I think it's a good thing.
I guess they're edible too, aren't they? I mean, I know
they
people
are.
Who pick dandelion greens first thing in the spring, and it's an early salad, isn't it?
It is, and it's one of the earliest salads. And of course, you can make dandelion wine out. I never have, although I've got some recipes in cookbooks how to do it. But I don't think I would ever embark on that. But yes, you can actually make dandelion wine. And
have you ever had dandelion wine? I've never had dandelion wine. I don't know what it would taste like.
I can imagine it would sort of taste like green and bitter, you know.
That's what I thought.
That's what I would think that it would taste like, but maybe not. Maybe it is really good and I'm missing something by not making any.
I wonder if you can buy it. I've never seen it for sale. Somebody must sell it.
absolutely. Somebody probably does somewhere. The next one is Scarlet Creeping Time. Now, this is a very interesting time because it's a creeping time, and it also can grow through your grass, and it does not it doesn't grow very high, and it's actually a very pretty, well, scarlety pink color, and it smells wonderful. It's very hardy when you walk on it, and it isn't prickly like some creeping things that go through your lawn. It's actually very nice to walk on, and it's very soft, isn't it? Yeah, very nice and very beautiful. I know people say that the bright color is very beautiful, and it also attracts a lot of wonderful pollinators. And the next
I wanted to ask you, do you walk barefoot through your garden when you've got all of these wonderful pollinators on as ground cover? Because one of the things I've discovered is that bees like feet. Or wasps like feet. So if you're walking barefoot through, it could be a painful experience. You've got to wear shoes if you're going to have those pollinators as ground cover, don't you?
Well, yes. If you're going to walk in the grass, well, I tend to put shoes on anyway, or sandals on anyway, because I never know what's going to be in the grass or whatever. So to protect your feet because they do like to, and you don't want to step on them because all they do is sting you, and then that's it. That's the end of them. And
that's no good for either of you. Yeah.
No, absolutely not. My next one is columbine, which I love, and mine comes up every year. It is a native plant to North America. It's beautiful purple flowers, and I really like that plant. It pretty well stays most of the summer, and it also doesn't grow very tall.
Yeah, a friend of mine gave me some seeds from wild columbine in her field. She lives on a farm, and it's been very successful in my garden. I love that stuff, and so do the pollinators, don't they?
Oh, they really love it. Like and you do not want to walk barefoot near the patch of columbine because it's always buzzing, which is a good thing, right?
Yeah. That's right.
Very good. And all your herbs, most of my herbs, I let a lot of them flower so that they will attract different pollinators. The chives are always buzzing, which I think is great. And their purple flowers are very good to put into soups or salads, but the pollinators also like them, so I leave some for the pollinators, which is really good. And then I also like to leave the dill flowers, and I have one dill plant that I don't know. I missed the pot because I do a lot of container gardening. I must have missed the pot a few times. Didn't get enough rain, and of course dill really likes rain. But it's come back now, rather straggly, but it's got a lot of flowers on it, so I just, it's not going to be good for eating, so the pollinators can have that one all to themselves.
That's nice. You know, I have some dill as well. I know my son likes to pick the flowers and put them in with the pickles because that tastes really nice. They're good for that purpose. If you shake them well and get the pollinators out before you put them in the jar.
Yes.
But swallowtail butterflies love dill flowers, and they will. I thought my dill looks so great, and then I saw that there were swallowtail caterpillars on it, and I thought, they can have the dill. I don't need that much dill. They can have the dill instead.
That's why I left this one too, because I went to touch it, and I noticed around the flowers when I was touching it, there was little like balls of things that I thought, something's been laying their larva here. I'm just going to leave it there. I don't know. So, and the next one is my strawberries. And this year, my strawberries were really good, which I thought was really interesting because they've been really dry. But they've actually came back a second time. I actually got a really good crop the second time. And the flowers attract a lot of pollinators, too. And so that's kind of fun to have. And even if you just put a pot of strawberries out, they can grow very nicely in a pot. You have to keep squirrels away from them. But
yes. Yeah, those guys aren't pollinators. Those are pests.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And any of your fruit, like any of your fruit trees, I don't have fruit trees here at all, but any of your fruit trees, they also gather different pollinators, which is really neat. And, of course, some of our native plants are black-eyed Susans and our periwinkle. They're very nice. And some people think that they're weeds. They're not.
Mm-hmm.
They really help our pollinators. They are native plants. They will reseed every year, so you'll get those back and nice, beautiful wild flowers. And yeah, that's pretty well what's in my garden.
Wow! Do you do tours of your garden? Oh, and the red runner beans?
Yeah, they love the pollinators love them. I didn't put any in this year. I didn't put any runner beans in this year. Last year I had lots of runner beans, and I had lots of pollinators on those. And yeah, they love the flowers when they come out, though.
Well, I guess without the pollinators, we wouldn't have the strawberries or the beans or the fruit, would
nope.
we? I mean, that's you
we
need
wouldn't.
Those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
And I know that some people get really upset about the fact that there are bees or wasps or even flies around, but they seem to like the butterflies. And I love the fact that I've been able to find butterflies in my garden. That makes me very happy.
Yeah, I didn't get as many this year. Usually I have a lot, but I didn't get as many this year, a few. I do know that there is a bit of a problem, and
yes.
Some of this is going to become controversial because people will want to put, as we destroy their habitats, they'll be wanting to put things into their gardens that some people don't want, and I think we have to rethink things for the wildlife around us.
I think you're so right. Thank you so much,
yes.
Susan. It's lovely talking with you.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
Bye. Tune in for our gardening chats with Susan every second Thursday on Kelly and Company. Coming up next, community reporter Annette Dennis highlights summer events at the Covent Garden Market in London, Ontario, including the London Brunch Fest. Welcome back to Kelly and Company. You can find all the links and information shared on today's show at the Kelly and Company blog. You can visit ami.ca/KellyCo for the full Kelly and Company blog. This includes topics from our community reporters and contributors and a link to the Kelly and Company podcast. Again, that's ami.ca/KellyCo. Well, right now, it's time for one of our community reporters. We have Annette Dennis joining us from southwestern Ontario. Let's head to London and have a visit with Annette. How are you, Annette?
I'm doing pretty good for a kind of a dreary, rainy day here in London. How are you, Danielle?
I am hot and sticky, and I only wish it would rain. It's miserably sticky out here, and they keep saying it's going to rain, and they lie a lot. It just doesn't happen. My garden wants the rain.
Oh, no kidding. I know. We've had some really good rainfalls here the last couple of days, so yay, that's awesome.
Oh, that's good.
So
I'm sure that
it your way.
Thank you. Please do. I'm sure our last guest, Susan Kearney, would really enjoy having some rain for her garden as well.
Absolutely.
Now, you've got a whole bunch of wonderful topics for us today. Three exciting events happening this month at the Covent Garden Market in London. Can you tell us what they are?
Yeah, so I was actually just going to highlight one, but I thought, you know, they all sound really wonderful and something for everybody. So I thought, why not just put them all on the show today? So like you said, these events are happening at the Covent Garden Market in London, which is at 130 King Street in a market square. So first up, we have London Brunch Fest, which is this Sunday, August 7th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And this is going to be the first annual event. So yay, something to look forward to every year. And it's presented by Dine In 519. And it's going to this event is going to feature mimosa and Caesar bars, as well as some of the local food vendors. And what they're going to do is they're offering up really unique dishes specifically for this brunch event. They're going to have music, DJs, giveaways, prizes, that sort of thing. Wow. And I was on their Facebook page, and they are actually, they're partnering with Denny's Canada, and there's going to be a pancake eating contest. So, and what they're going to do is participants. Yeah, I've never seen one of those, not in person anyways, but so yeah, they're going to select participants that day. So if you know somebody who, you know, they can go the extra mile, that's something that they can maybe look into for sure.
Oh, that sounds like something our friend Kelly might be interested in. What do you think?
I think we should round up Kelly and a couple of folks to, you know, anybody want to come from Toronto, let's do it.
Bring your appetite.
Absolutely. And so some of the, just to highlight some, they do have some of the vendors listed. So some of the foods they're going to serve up. One vendor is going to have fried chicken with jalapeno waffles and crispy eggs Benny, which I'm assuming is Eggs Benedict. Japanese souffle pancakes, which they kind of describe as a cross between buttermilk pancakes, vanilla cupcakes, and baked custard in one dish.
Wow.
There's going to be, empanadas with bacon and potato, breakfast pizza, breakfast tacos. So if folks want to learn more as the day approaches, yeah, they definitely will post stuff up on their Facebook event page.
All right, that sounds terrific, I have to say. And I mean, who doesn't like brunch anyway? Everybody likes brunch.
I haven't been,
it's the best.
Exactly. I haven't been to brunch in ages. So yeah, it sounds wonderful.
My neighborhood has a number of brunch restaurants, and during COVID, some of them had to close because people weren't able to go. So this sounds absolutely wonderful. So what else are you going to tell us about in London?
Okay, so they have two more foodie events in particular. So they're having a cocktail show with a seafood-themed edition, and that's happening Saturday, August 13th from 4 to 11:45 p.m. at the market. So they describe it, the cocktail show as a cultural demonstration of one of the oldest art forms, mixology. So they're going to have cocktails from all over the world, and they're going to serve them up with seafood dishes that kind of pair really well with summer cocktails. Now, they don't have specific vendors listed, but as the day approaches, I'm sure they will post more information on their Facebook event page. And then finally, yeah, it sounds really good. You know, encouraging people to share their favorite seafood and pair it with their favorite cocktails. So, and I had no idea. I'm not a cocktail person, so I was like amazed at the variety that people were highlighting.
It's really all about the food, isn't it?
It is.
I mean,
food and drink, and that's all. That's life, right?
Yeah.
And
I
friends.
Mean, I'm yes, that's it. And you can you sit outside, do you know, for this?
Yeah, actually it is. Sorry, I should have been more specific. It is taking place in the market square in the wintertime. That's where they have their ice rink, but in the summertime, that's where they have their market, and they have special events, which is just in the market square, right outside the market.
Nice.
So it will definitely be an outdoor event. And then wrapping up the month, they're having London Taco Fest, which is August 26th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 26th, 27th, and 28th, 5 to 11 p.m., 4 to 11, and 12 to 7 p.m. And again, this is going to be music, variety of food, beverages available, and then tacos as well. And they don't have the specific vendors there, but I'm sure it should be a wonderful selection of local food vendors.
Nice. I imagine that the drinks they're going to serve match up with the tacos too.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's kind of fun. I think it these sort of events are fun, whether you're a foodie, you know, you have a really distinct palate, or like you said, I haven't been had brunch in ages, so it's kind of a nice, fun way to go and see what's out there and see what you're in the mood for and try something new, maybe.
Yeah, sounds very, very nice indeed. Now, there's some theater happening as well. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so Fringe Binge 2022 is back, and it's happening August 16th to the 21st. So we've been a few years without this type of event. So it is taking place at the Palace Theatre, which is at 710 Dundas Street East here in London. So this year, the Fringe is back in a new and very compact format. It's not like all over the city where, you know, you go here and there. So it's kind of an interesting new take on it. So they're going to be, the plays will be on the main stage at the Palace as well as the Procuneor Hall, which is a smaller theater. So there's going to be six plays over 6 days. So folks can go see a play a day or whatever, but they also have done the schedule. So if folks want to do a real, real fringe binge, they can go and watch six plays in one day, and that's Saturday, August 20th. And the plays range from dance to classical theater, from intrigue to thought-provoking drama.
Oh,
so
boy,
something for everybody. Yeah.
Do you know some of the titles for the plays?
Yeah, so the six plays, one is called Boundaries, and this one's really interesting. Maybe John Bon Jovi was right. Passing Notes, Stick Stuck, Tango to the Point, and The Tempest. And like these are all by local, you know, written and produced and performed by local theater artists. And there is a link on your blog that if folks want to learn a little bit more about what the play is, a little blurb, they can go and check it out there to see what intrigues them.
Now, do you have any notes on the accessibility of these various plays? Are any of them described or made accessible in another way?
No, that is something I personally haven't seen that yet in London. It would be really cool if something like that could come up. But as far as I know, they don't have the description available. They are accessible. Both theaters are accessible. The washrooms are a little bit up. It's been a while since I've been in the theater, but everything is accessible for sure.
Oh, that's good to know.
For walkers and wheelchairs, yeah.
Yeah. So this is Yes, go ahead, please.
I should have said tickets are $15, and that includes all the taxes and fees and everything like that. And they are the plays, which is, everybody who's a fringer, they know that the plays are usually pretty short. So these are all less than 1 hour in length as well.
Now, is the ticket price for all the plays together, or is that per play? So if you go on the Saturday to watch them all, is that $15 for all of them, or do you have to pay that for each one?
For each play.
For each play.
So $15 okay. for each play. And the money, from what I understand with the Fringe, the money goes directly back into the performer's pocket. So you're directly
helping to support the artists. Yeah.
Exactly. And they've been suffering like so many people the last couple of years. So, yeah.
That's so much the truth too, Annette. I know that so many artists have been out of work and really having a rough time. So it's good to know that you can have a wonderful time seeing the plays and you can help out people who might be in a difficult circumstance as well.
Absolutely. And connect with old friends, you know, it's,
that's great.
So much fun it's nice to hear people going back to the theater and doing fun things again this summer. So
yes, it's lovely to know. Thank you so much. It's lovely talking to you, Annette.
You as well. Thanks, Danielle. Take care.
You too. You can go to the Kelly & Company blog for all the notes from Annette Dennis's community report. Our reporters join us Mondays and Tuesdays regularly on the show. Coming up in the next hour on our CNIB Smart Life segment, we learn about HumanWare's newest offering in the world of orientation and mobility, the Stellar Trek. Plus, joining us on this week's roundtable is AMI video editor Mark Phoenix, But up next, it's the Thursday Buzz with our buddy, Margaret Weldon.
Allowed to throw them and be allowed to choke them, and for them to see that I'm not so fragile, they can choke me too, they can throw me too, and I'm not going to break. That was very satisfying, just being allowed to participate in something rough.
Kelly and Company, sharing your stories.
Welcome back to Kelly and Company. If you'd like to get a hold of us on Kelly & Company, you can contact us via phone at 1-866-509-4545. You can leave us a voicemail on this number, and if you'd like us to play your message on air, please leave us permission to do so. You can also email us with your thoughts at feedback@ami.ca or reach us on Twitter. The handle is at AMI-audio. It would be lovely to hear from you. We're having a good time. We hope that you are as well. Today, rather than our buzz with Bill, we're having buzz with our friend Margaret Weldon. She's filling in for Bill Shackleton on the buzz, and she's here to talk about some very interesting headlines. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, Danielle, and how's it going for you?
Well, it's good. I have to say, I get to talk to some of my favorite people, and you're one of them. So thank you so much for being here. And I'm just going to tell our listeners the secret that you're going to be with us for the roundtable today, too. So I'm delighted about that. Yes. What do you have for us?
Okay, so let's start off with something kind of humorous. At least I thought it was anyways. So, Danielle, do you and your family eat chicken wings?
Oh, yes. Many.
You do. Yeah.
Yeah.
and do you guys like them with or without sauce?
Well, that's an argument that goes on rather a lot in our house. I like them dry and crispy, and others like them with sauce. So we usually have to order more than one kind. I confess. It's not necessarily the best, but what can I tell you?
Well, that's it. And I guess as long as you're not making them like that, that makes it okay too, right?
Well, you know, anything that I don't have to cook is fine with me.
Right. Right. And so how about you? Like, are there any particular sauces maybe that you like?
I do like a spicy sauce. If I'm going to have a sauce, I'm going to dip it into something that has some jalapenos in it or something with spice. I have to say that, you know, the hot buffalo wings, yeah, those are really good. Yeah. I like those.
Yeah. See, I don't like, I like sauces, but I can't do the spicy sauces. So I'm probably a boring chicken wing eater, but that's okay. That's,
you know, you get right to eat whatever is good for you, Margaret.
That's right. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And sometimes I like it. Sometimes I like eating them early in the morning too, but that's
why not?
Story.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
A little pizza, anyway, a few chicken wings. Yeah. It's all good.
Yeah. That's right. It all goes down the same area, right? So yeah. My grandma used to say, yeah. Anyway, so there's a food chain, a restaurant chain in the States, and it's called Applebee's. Now, there are a few Applebee establishments in Canada. I know there's one in Niagara Falls. I believe there might be another one in St. Catharines. And then I know there's one in Barrie, Ontario as well. And they serve, I don't know if you would call it pub food or not exactly. Like, it's kind of between pub food, but not really fancy food. I want to say like the old Golden Griddles, but I don't know how many people out there would be familiar with Golden Griddles.
I remember Golden Griddles. I liked their pancakes.
Yeah, I did too, actually. And their milkshakes, they were good too. But that's another story. Anyway, so Applebee's is apparently famous for their combination of chicken wings and date night. Oh. And the reason being, yeah, think about that, eh? And wings, apparently, according to the chief marketing officer, who says that wings are among the most popular items on their menu. So what Applebee's did, they teamed up with a company called Wiki Cosmetic Company, and they came out with four different lip glosses that are the flavors of these sauces.
No way. Can you get blue cheese lip gloss? That's funny.
I'll tell you. Wait till you hear the names of them in a few minutes. Yeah. But here's another thing that I didn't know. It's one thing about doing some of these segments. You get to learn something. But apparently July the 29th is National Chicken Wing Day.
Who knew?
Yeah, that's right. So in order to celebrate National Chicken Wing Day 2022 plus date night, the companies, the Applebee restaurant chain and the Wiki Cosmetic Company released these four flavors of sauces. And wait till you hear what they are. One is called Get Me Hot Buffalo Wings.
Oh goodness.
Because the idea is to add some spice to the date night, apparently.
I guess.
Another one is, yeah, that's right. Another one is called Sweet Chili Kiss. Ooh. I guess, you know, if you, yeah. And then there's Be My Honey Pepper.
Oh,
and then there's nice. BB, yeah, and then there's BB Cutie. And I guess that's supposed to be BB Cutie. Yeah, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, not only. Pardon me? Go ahead, Danielle.
I'm wondering, how much do these cost, do you know?
Yes. If you want to buy like just one tube or one flavor, you're looking at paying $18 American, like $18 US currency. If you want to buy the full set or the four of tubes, you would pay $65 US currency. Now, I don't know if that's, to me, that seems a little expensive for lip gloss.
It does to me too. I mean, I'm used to the, you know, the sort of the standard stuff you get in the drugstore, and it doesn't cost that much. That's for sure.
Yeah. Like the $3 stuff, right?
That's right. yeah. That's more my speed, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
you know, and then you get the free sauces
for first dates. Oh, do you get sauces with it? Oh, that's funny.
Well, no. You don't get it with it. But I mean, for me, I don't know that I would pay for these tubes knowing that I could get $3 chapstick or free sauces on the side if I were to go to Applebee's and get chicken wings or any chicken wings, you know? I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Here's another interesting piece of news, too, is along with the announcement or news release, there was a video released, a 2.5 minute video. It was inspired by Lady Marmalade music called Taste My Face. And it shows. Yeah. and it features all the different sauces and the people eating them. And I think it might be a little bit explicit. So you might want to check it out if you know, before you show it to any young kids or something like that.
Yeah. That sounds exciting. Okay, well, now we know how to get lip gloss and hot sauce all in the same place. Very exciting.
And don't forget the hot dates, too.
And the hot dates, yeah. I guess, well, I have to confess, at my age, that's a little, a little past my level of interest, but never mind.
I've been married
a long time, yeah.
we've been there and done that. That's what we're saying.
Exactly.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. And the best is still yet to come. That's what I hear.
Of course it is, Margaret.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell us what else you have for us today.
Okay, so the mafia movie called The Godfather, which was directed by Canadian director Francis Ford Coppola in 1972, and then I know there were two other ones that came out after, turns 50 years old this month. And to celebrate that, Airbnb makes an offer you can't refuse. And if you remember The Godfather, who's played by,
Marlon Brando.
Yeah. I mean, that was their that was his famous line. Remember, make you an offer you can't refuse.
You can't refuse. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Airbnb has managed to secure the property, which was featured in Godfather, Marlon Brando's daughter's wedding in The Godfather. Her name was Talia. Oh, I can never pronounce
Talia
her last
Shire.
Name.
Yeah, that's right. Talia yeah. Shire. Yeah.
Shire.
She played
yeah, I want to
Connie
say
Connie Corleone. Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. I remember she married the guy that went against Martin, that went against the family in the end, right? Because he mm-hmm. anyway, that's a whole nother story. So anyway, this property features 7 bathrooms, 5 bedrooms, a saltwater pool, a pub in the basement, and its own gym. And it's located in New York and it's been renovated. So if people wanted to, they could book a 30-night stay at the Godfather's property, and it's $50 a night.
Whoa, that's not even all that expensive for something that looks, I can see the cover of the picture, and it is amazing. It's a, well, 3 stories plus it's an L-shaped property, sort of Tudor style with outside beams. It's a kind of cantaloupe color, I guess. And it seems to have not just a really large swimming pool, but also a hot tub and a built-in barbecue with sinks. It is very, very fancy. As you say, it's huge, 6,248 square foot home. You could put 4 families in that and not even notice, couldn't you?
I wonder if they'd let us go and do a feature on it, Danielle, you know, and maybe pick up the expenses.
What do you think? That's wonderful. 5 bedrooms and 7 bathrooms. Holy
sure.
smokes.
And then we can have them bring some chicken wings.
Yeah. Right? Okay. Yeah. Let's do it. It's a date, Margaret.
Yeah. Sounds good to me. Yeah. We deserve
okay.
it, right?
Yeah. Well, thank you. We'll be speaking with you again very shortly. That was our friend Margaret Weldon speaking about the buzz. Coming up next on our CNIB Smart Life segment, we learn about HumanWare's newest offering in the world of orientation and mobility, the Stellar Trek. Welcome back to Kelly and Company. I'm Danielle McLaughlin, and I'm here with Margaret Weldon, co-hosting for Kelly and Ramya, respectively. We are going to be speaking to our friends from the CNIB, but first we're going to talk about Radio Player Canada. AMI Audio is now available on Radio Player Canada, Canada's most powerful radio app. You can download Radio Player Canada from the Apple App Store. And to find out more about Radio Player Canada, go to ami.ca/radioplayer. So let's check in with our friends from CNIB Smart Life. Today, we're joined by friends from HumanWare, Mathieu Paquette, Product Manager, and Michel Pépin, Sales Director. Let's learn about HumanWare's newest offering in the world of orientation and mobility, the Stellar Trek. Welcome, Mathieu and Michel.
Hi there.
Nice to hear you. Good afternoon. Mathieu, can you tell us about your role as product manager?
Yeah, most certainly. Well, first of all, thank you for having us on the show. It's really nice to meet you both. My name is Mathieu. As you mentioned in the introduction, I'm the product manager here at HumanWare. So basically, I'm in charge of all of our audio assistant products like the Victor Reader Stream, the Trek, and the Stratus, which I'm sure a large part of your audience is familiar with, and our orientation mobility products. And so I take care of, you know, basically my role is to be sort of the voice of the customer. I keep my finger on the pulse and see what people like, what people want in you know, existing products as well as new product development.
Matthew, can you tell us then exactly what is the Stellar Trek?
Yeah, most certainly. So the Stellar Trek is our newest product for orientation mobility. Back in the day, if we go back a few years, we had a product called the Trekker Breeze. This is a bit of an evolution to that product. So with the Stellar Trek, our aim was to help people with low vision and blindness to have a device that will help them get around into their everyday life. It has 100% tactile interface, so it's made to be user-friendly for low vision and blind people. I mean, you can do all kinds of stuff with it. You can record routes, landmarks, like your favorite spots, or even like your favorite bench in a park or something like that, and get directions to go to it, or even obstacles if you have a regular route. You'll get precise directions if you want to go point A to point B. But as I said before, this is something that, you know, all GPS does, and this is an evolution. And by evolution, what I mean is we've integrated some artificial intelligence into the product in the form of two cameras on the back of the unit. So with the cameras, you can do some OCR, which is optical character recognition, basically using them to read out loud, you know, either what's in your current environment or a document, or even, for example, to see the address on a door. So let's say you got directions to go to a certain door, you were going to your friend's house and it was 123 X Street. Then once you reach your destination, you can take a picture of the door and it's going to tell you, you know, if you're really in front of 123, or perhaps you overshot a little bit and you're in front of 125. So, this is really an evolution of your standard, just, you know, normal GPS.
Wow. That sounds pretty good. HumanWare already has a GPS product called the Victor Reader Trek. And how is the Stellar Trek different from that?
Yeah, so the Victor Reader Trek is a product we've been selling for a few years now. And it is a product that combines entertainment and GPS mobility. Basically, it came from a demand of having a new product after the Trekker Breeze. And we knew that a lot of people like the Victor Reader Stream, which has been out for over 10 years now, and which is used to read books, listen to podcasts, such as the one we're on right now, and, internet radio and everything. So basically, people wanted to combine both. Now, the Stellar Trek is more of a dedicated device. It is meant really for people who want a more advanced device for their everyday navigation. Some people will prefer to have the Victor Reader Trek, and that's fine. We're not, you know, we're going to keep selling the Victor Reader Trek separately for at least one more year. But some people, you know, it really depends. It's personal preference, but some people like having a dedicated device for each task. And as I said, the Stellar Trek has the artificial intelligence and the camera system, which we don't have on the Victor Reader Trek, that allows you to enhance your mobility even further.
So then, this is so fascinating today, learning lots. So Matthew, then how do you leverage artificial intelligence with the Stellar Trek?
Well, one of the really cool features we have, as I mentioned before, is the address recognition. This is to help, you know, in the fabled final 40 feet or 10 meters for Canadian listeners of the journey. When you reach your destination, you're going to be pressing on your Stellar Trek the up arrow. It'll bring up the detection mode. You then bring the Stellar Trek to your eye level and point it towards the general direction of the door you're trying to reach. And then it'll guide you with a series of beeps. And when it's confident seeing a door, it'll take a picture and then read out loud any results found. So for example, if you're on a commercial street and there are two doors and you're snapping two addresses, it'll tell you two doors found, address 123 and 125. Now, just like anything that's based off of artificial intelligence, we want to be fully transparent. This is not going to work 100% of the time. It's important to manage expectations. It's a device that works offline. It's not cloud-based, so you don't need to be connected to the internet. If the lighting is difficult, you know, if it's late at night, or if it's the address is on a window door with a lot of sunlight, or if the address is obstructed by, say, a tree branch, there's a chance you might not see it. But in our testing that we've done, we are getting pretty good results. Around, you know, 70 to 80% of the time, we're able to see the address fine and get the device to read it out loud. And it is a device that is going to be updated as time goes on. We have a dedicated team that is working on improving the stutter check, especially this feature, to make it more and more and eventually reach 90-95%, which is our goal.
Well, so this sounds fascinating. As you get closer to the address you're looking for, it can basically give you step-by-step directions to get to the correct door, even if there are several doors next to one another. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to tell you, you know, there's two doors found. The first one is at 12 o'clock, meaning right in front of you. The other one's at 1 o'clock, and it's going to tell you the approximate distance based off the camera. So, yeah, it is exactly what it's used for.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. So it can tell you the distance you are from the door, and you can just make your way knowing how far you have to go.
Exactly. It'll give you a good idea. I mean, it might say 20 meters, it might be 19, it might be 21. It's not going to be exact to the centimeter, obviously, but it's going to give you a pretty good picture. You can have it in meters, you can have it in feet if you prefer. But it's going to give you a pretty good idea, and it's going to help you, you know, doing that last 10-meter navigation.
Well, how many languages does it speak, I wonder? How many languages? Yeah. Like, is it French, English, or how do you know?
No, there's around 15 languages supported at launch. We're planning on adding more as time goes by. As I said, it's going to be a device that's going to evolve. But at launch time, we have around, I don't have the exact number right now offhand, but it's around 15 languages supported.
Holy Canadian.
That's very nice to know. My goodness. Yeah.
It's pretty broad. I mean, obviously for us, French, English, and Spanish are probably the most popular one here. But yeah, there's a few more languages.
That's really helpful. You know how when you just use ordinary GPS, it just says you have reached your destination and it doesn't give you anything better than that. So this sounds much, much more specific.
Yeah, that was the goal. So we know, you know, and no GPS is going to be 100% accurate. No map is going to be 100% accurate. If you're on a map that's a little bit less accurate and you were going, as I said, for example, to 123 Main Street, it is very possible that on the map it was tagged a little bit, you know, a couple feet earlier or later. So this way we avoid the scenario where you think you're at 123, but in reality you're at 125 and you're knocking on the wrong door. With the camera, you can take a picture and it's going to tell you you're at 125, and then, you know, you overshot by a couple meters. You just move a little bit further or, you know, go back a little bit.
That's a really great invention. What do you see as the future of Stellar Trek?
Well, the built-in AI that we have, the artificial intelligence and the cameras, they really allow us to envision a lot of really cool features in the future. I'm going to premise this by saying a quick disclaimer. What I'm going to talk about right now is in no way, shape, or form a promise. These are stuff that we are looking into that we would like to bring in the future on the Stellar Trek, but these are still all under development. Some of the stuff that I'm going to talk about might not come to fruition. Some of it might. And I think a really good example of this, and this is something that would be really great for the blind community, would be indoor navigation. So as you probably know, indoor navigation is pretty much the holy grail of orientation mobility devices, to be able to navigate, you know, in a shopping mall, in the building or whatever. So there are a ton of ways to make it work. Some companies work with beacons, some don't. So we're looking at all of the technologies that are out there, and we're seeing which, if any, once again, because there might not be, but if any of them are good, would be a good fit for the Stellar Trek. So we have cameras on the device. So is it possible to, you know, maybe bring up the device once you've entered the shopping mall? It's going to tell you there's a store at 10 meters on the left, a corridor on the right. There's a bathroom on the left because it sees the sign for a bathroom. So this is all the kind of stuff that we would like to bring eventually. It's not going to be there at launch. And once again, it might or might not happen, but it is stuff we're looking into. A feature, for example, that we're working on right now, this one I can say for sure it's coming up, is the built-in compass. So just like you have on your, you know, iPhone or your Android phone, you can... If you're standing on a street corner and you put in an address, it tells you, all right, go 100 meters northwest. That's all fine and dandy, but I mean, where am I headed right now? Like, what's my current heading? So we're going to have a compass that's going to allow you, it's going to tell you you're currently, you know, pointing north. So if you have to go northwest, you need to go a little bit, you know, to the left. So we're looking at stuff like currency recognition, for example, take a picture of a couple bills and it's going to tell you have a $20 bill and a $50 bill, stuff like scene recognition and all that. So this is, you know, these are some of the features that we're looking into.
Those sound really useful, don't they, Margaret?
They really do. Michelle, can you tell us then when will the Stellar Trek be available on the Canadian market, and how much the purchase price will be, and where we can go and see it eventually?
Absolutely, absolutely. I guess I'll defer back to Mathieu to confirm the launch date, because I know we're talking about August here, but I don't have a firm date in, I think it's later in the month of August. Mathieu, do you have the?
During the week of August 22nd.
So that's okay. Quite soon.
Second.
Yeah. Perfect. Really? Yeah. And where would we be able to go and see it? Is it going to be in all of your stores, or will you be taking it from area to area? How is that going to work?
Well, the distribution of the Stellar Trek will, I'm pleased to announce that it'll definitely be available through our regular distribution network, meaning it's not an exclusive product with just some distributors. It's really going to be available through all of our distribution. Of course, CNIB being a preferred partner, will definitely be working with some local regional offices, not all of them across Canada, because there is a lot, but we're definitely going to be working with the major ones in each provinces to ensure that they have a demo unit so that people can actually go see the unit, really use it a little bit, play with it, even if, depending on how the Smart Life centers are set up, go for a quick walk outside to see how it really react and work. That way, people will know exactly what they're looking to buy if they're interested in purchasing the Stellar Trek. I definitely want to say though, it's really is an exciting product, because it's pretty much the only standalone device that will allow visually impaired users to get that level of information. Keep in mind that we're really talking about position, location here. We're not talking about guiding. Step by step, the guiding part is, of course, it's done through the mobility skills of each user. And I will always mention that it's really important before looking into a GPS solution to have very good mobility skills.
All right, Michelle, we're going to have to stop you there, because we've clean run it right out of time. I'm sorry about that.
No worries.
Yeah.
If they need more information, they can contact HumanWare. They can contact myself or Mathieu. We'll be more than happy to provide more information. And as we roll out the launch, all of the information will be on our
website. All right. That's great.
Thank you so much. We were joined by Michelle and Mathieu from HumanWare talking to us about the Stellar Trek. We're joined by guests from CNIB Smart Life on the first Thursday of each month. And coming up next, joining us on this week's roundtable is AMI video editor Mark Phoenix.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval. Just say it.
The blind guy feels it now, goes, I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
Well, every Thursday we have Roundtable, and it's usually hosted by Kelly MacDonald, except when it's not. And today it's hosted by me, Danielle McLaughlin, and I have as guests Margaret Weldon and AMI video editor Mark Phoenix. Hello, Margaret, and hello, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Hello there. The terrible opinions machine is here.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Because, you know, I get accused by my family of having a whole lot of weird opinions, so I always like meeting other people who have many opinions. We've got a whole bunch of interesting things to talk about on the roundtable today. Our first item, and get ready for this, U.S. President Joe Biden signed an executive order earlier this week to make it a little easier for women who have to travel from state to state to get an abortion. Of course, this is following the striking down of the Roe v. Wade decision after so many years. Let's hear what they have to say.
President Biden today signs an executive order to pave the way for Medicaid to pay for abortion services for people traveling from a state where abortion is illegal to a state where abortion is legal. The president will sign the order during the first meeting of a federal interagency task force on reproductive health care access he created last month. He'll attend the event virtually since he's still isolating with a rebound case of COVID. The move by the president comes as voters in Kansas Tuesday overwhelmingly blocked an amendment that would have eliminated the constitutional right to an abortion from that state's constitution. Karen Travers, ABC News, Washington.
So, Margaret, what do you think about this particular development now in the U.S.? How is it striking you that the president's trying to protect people's rights when he can't really seem to do it federally? How does that look to you?
I guess my first thing is I don't really understand the whole American government structure to begin with. Like, it just to me sounds very complicated. But I guess the thing is, if this is going to help women who need it, then I'm all for it. I can't even believe the verdict was overturned anyways. That was sort of blows my mind. Just because I know I read up on the history of it when it was first brought into play. And, you know, we always talk about freedom of choice and all kinds of things. And I guess, you know, what makes me wonder is what's going to happen next. But yeah, if this is the way they have to do it, and if it means that women are going to be able to get what they need safely, then sure, I'm all for it.
Yeah, comparing it, the U.S. and Canadian systems is a bit of a dog's breakfast. But suffice it to say that in Canada, our criminal laws are federal, and in the United States, they go state by state. So that's why you get the situation where abortion may be illegal in one state and legal in the next state, and people will have to travel in order to have the procedure. Mark, what's your view on this?
It's pretty desperate when the president has to reach for the executive orders to try to forestall what a whole bunch of states are trying to do, which is actually prevent people from going to other states to, seek reproductive care. I think Idaho was one state that's trying to put something in law, which would actually make it illegal to abet someone crossing state lines. Like, they're trying to trap people and trying to, remove people's bodily autonomy. And there's a whole assault on bodily autonomy happening right now, which, any disabled person, myself, yourselves, a lot of people listening to this, it's a critical, characteristic in our lives, having basic control over what we do and what we need. And they're going after people who need, gender affirming care. They're going after people who need reproductive care, trying to, ram everyone into a couple of statistical boxes and saying, this is how you will live, and we will tell you what you will do with your own body. The joke I've seen going around is government's small enough to fit in your uterus.
Oh, gosh, that's so true.
Yeah.
I read a couple of stories about families where a mother and daughter were crossing state lines for they were on their way to some kind of an athletic competition. The daughter was going to compete, and they were stopped by the police, who asked the daughter if she was pregnant. They asked her all kinds of incredibly invasive questions, none of which by law she should answer. She doesn't need to. And yet you can imagine the chilling effect of crossing state lines if you think you're going to be interrogated about your bodily integrity, as you've said, Mark. This is quite a troubling thing.
But the thing is, you could say it by law, you shouldn't have to answer it. But then if you don't, what are the consequences?
Well, right? You wonder, don't you? Yeah.
Well, this was the kind of mess that popped up way back in the mid 1800s. Some people have made reference to the Fugitive Slave Act as the kind of thing that's kind of popping back up, where suddenly states that want to exert more control over people's bodies will rope in states that don't want to via federal force. Which is kind of ironic when you consider a lot of the striking down of Roe v. Wade was about over the claim that this should be left to the states, except when, people can go to another state, then apparently it's back to, let's make this a federal matter again.
Yeah, it's quite terrifying, actually, if you think about it. And, that you have the right to your bodily integrity, depending upon what state you live in, is really awful. I know that there are Canadian clinics that are setting themselves up to make themselves accessible to Americans crossing the border for reproductive care, including abortion. But, you know, as I mentioned on a Know Your Rights segment, the people who did this don't seem to understand how abortion has been defined. It includes such things as, you know, taking care of women who've miscarried, who need to have a dilatation and curettage, and they're having to go out of state. Their other choice may be to die from infection. So, you know, it's really, really
a terrifying
thing. I have
to wonder if they don't understand or they don't care. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
You know, because it's not them going through it. And
well, yeah. I love it when a whole bunch of old white guys, you know, determine what happens to women, right? I mean, it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. They say, yes, he who hath not a uterus. Well, no. that's certainly a story that is going to keep us troubled for some time to come. This one's slightly later, not necessarily entirely, but Beyoncé is removing an offensive term for disabled people from a new song that she co-wrote with Canadian rapper Drake. The song Healed, am I right? Heated on her record Renaissance contains a word. The word is spaz, that it's considered a derogatory reference to the medical term for a form of cerebral palsy. Beyoncé's spokeswoman says the word was not used intentionally in a harmful way. We know that Lizzo removed the word from one of her songs in June after disability advocates complained. Here's a clip of Heated by Beyoncé. I guess they didn't play the part with the dreaded word, but what do you think? Should people be changing the words of their songs because somebody doesn't like the insulting reference? Mark, what do you think?
I think if someone has the capability to, absolutely, go back, make that edit, and, you know, make it clear. You know, I may not have realized this was something I shouldn't say, but, you know, I've listened to people who've been telling me about this. I get it. It was wrong to do this. I'm going to go back and fix it. Lizzo kind of set the precedent by doing this already, and this is going to keep coming up more because there are a lot of words that get thrown around that people don't realize or just try to ignore that are slurs. There's one in particular for, like, referring to, like, Roma traveler people that just keeps getting used, that it'll just drop and I'll go, ugh, like I'll just I'll flinch.
And when it's used as a verb, it's even worse, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's terrible. Absolutely terrible. So the fact that, you know, this is a major studio, major artist production, they have all the capability, all the processing, all the masters, everything in the world to do it, they can absolutely go back in and make that change so as not to push away a part of the listening audience.
What do you think, Margaret?
I quite agree with Mark. I don't know how I could add to it. You know, I think the other thing too, when people have to also realize that sometimes they do, even though they don't mean it, like words really can hurt, right? Yes. And not just in songs, but in comments too. I mean, I go back to this, this Will Smith, you know, this kind of reminds me of the Will Smith and the Chris Rock thing where, no, you know, Will Smith did not have the right to hit anybody. But I think what happened was he was hurt because of the words that Chris Rock used against his wife, right?
His wife.
And I think it's the same thing here, right?
What do you think about the freedom of expression argument, though? You know, people say, you know, artists, singers, songwriters or artists should have the right to use language any way they choose. And if you don't like the song, don't listen to it. What do you think of that argument?
Yeah, that's kind of another way of looking at it too, right? Like, where does it stop? Where does it end? I guess.
Well, I mean, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, this comes to a question of, you know, the, you know, legal freedom of speech versus ethical freedom of speech. Legally, it's bounds on what the government can do. Ethically, if someone wants to sit there and say some hideously offensive word and argue, I have every right to say it, I think it's artistically important, I'm going to keep saying it, okay, you can go on saying it, and I can go on saying that you're a jerk for saying it.
That's true.
Freedom of speech for me and for thee.
That's,
you want to play it that way?
That is the way that it works. I would also imagine that there's a financial issue here. You know, if people are deeply offended by a song, they aren't going to pay for it. So, you know, maybe that's another good reason to go back and change it, as you have suggested. Although we know that there are, you know, kinds of music, certainly rap music, that use the N-word a whole lot. And, you know, some people said, I don't want to hear that word at all. And yet it seems to keep recurring in certain kinds of music. So, you know, will people go back and change that? I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I guess, again, it gets back to this art, like, as you say, the freedom of expression kind of thing too, right?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big question. Well, we have one more clip here. The parent company of popular retailers TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and Home Goods in the U.S. is under fire after being ordered to pay millions in fines following claims that they knowingly sold recalled products that put small children at risk. ABC's Ariel Reshef explains.
The Consumer Product Safety Commission says TJX stores knowingly sold, offered for sale, and distributed approximately 1,200 recalled products. Now the company will pay a $13 million fine. The majority of those items sold risk infant suffocation and death. They include the Kids 2 rocking sleepers, Fisher-Price rock-and-play sleepers, and Fisher-Price incline sleeper accessory for ultralight day and night play yards.
Goodness. Well... Yeah. She said 13 million, I think. Is that right?
Yeah. That's just...
Well,
wow.
Is that, in your view, a big enough settlement? Or, you know, I mean, when you're talking about something that could actually endanger the life of a child, I don't know. I mean, should they be ordered never again to sell a recalled product? What's your view, Mark? What do you think?
Well, I'm very curious what the exact circumstances are around this particular matter. I mean, it sounds like the kind of thing where a couple of individual stores might have continued selling without pulling them. It's whatever the circumstances are, things that endanger people's lives are things that have to be dealt with. And we, in particular, get really concerned about the lives of infants and children because they're so vulnerable. And to see someone, at least to see a company held to account for it, in a manner that, you know, might actually put a little dent in their profit margin, it's an increasingly rare thing to see. And it seems to be a bit of low-hanging fruit that they're going after, that they went after, you know, TJ Maxx for selling these things than they shouldn't have. But, you know, it's better than just blinking at it or not doing anything at all.
How about you, Margaret? You good on that?
Well... If you look at it, there's always recalled products that tend to get sold, isn't there? Right. If you think about cars, you know, we've sold this many cars, but they need to be recalled back in. And if you want, you go back to the dealer and you can trade it in for another, or you could get a different product, or you can get the whatever it is fixed on it. I don't know if you can do that in this case, but yeah, like, and I'm with Mark too. It's not something you would see very often either. Right.
I don't know about that. You know, I would be quite worried because, you know, the baby can't say to you, hey, mom, I heard that this chair that you've bought for me has actually been recalled because children have suffocated. You think, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, maybe there should be even greater penalties for doing that. I don't know whether any child actually lost his or her life, but even the potential is terrifying. 13 million.
I think they should at least make sure that they realize that, okay, you know what, there is something wrong with this particular product. Like they used to do years ago with the Fisher-Price strollers. I can remember there was one, a couple of lines that came out, right? And they said, well, if you have such and such a stroller, this model number, you can either take it to get it repaired or turn it in for new product or whatever the case is. So I think that might be the best way to go with it. I don't know.
So, if those stores said, we're recalling everything that we shouldn't have sold to you, that might just sort of be done quietly, whereas getting a huge fine like this might be enough for them to say, I guess we better not be selling recalled products any longer.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, is the lesson learned? We'll have to stay tuned to find out. Well, this has been lovely. It's so nice talking to both of you, Margaret and Mark. Thank you so much for giving us your opinions. I can't imagine anything more fun than hearing what other people think about important topics. Thanks so much.
Thank you very
coming
much.
Coming up next, we wrap up the show, plus find out what's coming up on the next edition of Now with Dave Brown. To Kelly and Company. I'm Danielle McLaughlin, and I've been speaking with our friend Margaret Weldon today. We've been having an awfully good time on this show, haven't we, Margaret?
It's been great. Lots of fun, lots of learning, yes.
Yeah. Well, if you are looking for described video, the described video guide can be found on the DV guide on ami.ca/DV guide. You just enter your postal code and then you'll get access to a list of all programs across all stations in Canada that are available with described video. Sounds like a great way of moving on with what you're watching. I love it. Margaret, did you have a favorite segment from today's show?
Actually, I did. I really enjoyed our roundtable today. The topics were great. And it was, it's kind of nice to get to talk with different people that you don't get to talk with. So it was nice to talk with Mark Phoenix and hear their points of view.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that too. There's nothing I like better than a good opinion. You know, as a person who lives by opinions, I just think that's so much fun. I have to say that I really enjoyed speaking with Susan Kearney. Susan is our gardener, and she has so many lovely descriptions of the plants in her garden. We were talking about pollinators being attracted to certain kinds of ground cover and flowers. And I have to say that as she was talking about it, I could almost smell what she was talking about. It was really lovely to to hear.
It's like you can almost hear the bees, isn't it, too? Remember,
that's
you
true. And she was talking about the, yes, she talked about the way certain flowers buzzed, and I absolutely could understand that. It was wonderful. Yeah. That was so great. Well, we are going to wrap up the show, and then we're going to hear from our friends now. But let's talk about what we're going to be seeing or listening to tomorrow. Margaret, you're back with our lifestyle headlines. A parent has created a smart webcam that detects when his baby is hungry, and John Beeler is going to tell us more about that. BC Blind Sports and Recreation has exciting active events happening this summer. Sylvie Fiquette will share the details. And we're going to be talking audiobooks with Ryan Hui. We will reflect back on the week's conversations on Cut for Time with Matt and Ramya. Meanwhile, we're going to be talking to our friends at Now. Do we have our people here, Matt?
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Margaret. Hello, Danielle. Yes.
Hey, how are you, Paul?
I am fine. I am here. I'm waiting. That's quite
that's
a segue
lovely.
You got
well,
there. On tomorrow's show, the gang from the Friday news panel. We'll be discussing the news of the week. Jody Gupta from the Pulse and journalist Michelle McQuigg will join Dave Brown to discuss some of the big stories, including the problem of our recent online crimes having swelled during the pandemic and what can be done to try and reduce the threats these online crimes are doing, especially when they're targeting children. Entertainment critic Michael McNeely reviews the HBO miniseries Irma Vep, which someone described to me as a movie within a movie. And Greg David from our AMI marketing department will give us a heads up on some of the new television programs debuting on the major networks this fall.
Well, that's my goodness, like you a have really a lot of show.
Yeah, like lots of topics. Hey, Paul, they keep you busy trying to prepare them and lots yes, of information.
Yes, they keep us busy. Indeed, they do. And I'm proud of that. Keep me off the street.
As you should be. Margaret, I don't know whether... have you seen Irma Vep? As you were mentioning that, Paul, I saw one episode of it, and it looks quite challenging. Sounds like a lot of fun.
It's different. Well, it's different.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Quite different.
No, well, I haven't had the pleasure.
I think that if we listen to now tomorrow, we will be intrigued even more. Thank you very much, Paul. It's lovely to hear your voice again.
Good to hear from you guys.
And Margaret, thank you so much for helping fill in and for your buzz segment, as well as your participating in the round table. Tomorrow is going to be a great show.
It was great fun. Take care, Danielle. Go relax.
You too. And I believe that we will have our friend Ramya back hosting tomorrow. Thanks so much and talk to you soon.
I've been watching this show called Evil on Paramount Plus, and it is indescribed, so shout out to that. And it has this concept of investigative show with a bit of thriller and horror and all these other underlying concepts, but really it's the question of religion versus physical world versus science. And the question comes to me as I near the end of season three. What used to scare us? Does it really scare us anymore? When I was younger, the things that would scare me in horror television and horror movies was the demons, the exorcisms, the very sacrilegious and all that. Plus, you know, what could be lurking in that closet or behind that door or under that thing, right? When the lights go off. You know, it wasn't as much slasher things and monsters depicted that way or too much violence. That wasn't what did it for me. It was very much the demonic, right? But as I get older, I'm finding even that stuff isn't as scary anymore. So really, is it the industry that's changing? You know, is it the way that these things are being portrayed on screen with the actual graphics and the elements of putting the productions together that is changing? Or is it psychological? What used to scare us is no longer as scary. Maybe it is for some people, but for myself, because it isn't, you aren't taking it in the same way you used to. And I'm very, very curious about that, because I do find the stuff that used to scare me absolutely, like no questions asked. I couldn't even watch certain things like Haunting of Hill House at night because I couldn't take an elevator or a stairwell after that. And so, you know, this is me as an adult, right? Like in my early 20s. Whereas now I'm able to kind of step back and not fully embrace the horror. Is that what it is? I'm very, very curious, and I'm curious if this is something that a lot of other people find as well. As we get older and as we become adults, is stuff just not scary anymore? We're grown up now. We're mature.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bovard. Join me monthly for Low Vision Moments, where I speak with awesome guests about some of the amusing things that happen when you're blind or partially sighted. Watch on YouTube or download Low Vision Moments from your favorite podcast distributor.